Morning. And hi to you guys, too. This morning I'm going to give my fourth talk on the Sandokai, which is the harmony of separation and oneness. And I'm going through it. It's a prose poem from the 8th century, written by Sekido, and I'm going through it a few lines at a time. So the lines for today are, the four elements return to their natures just as a child turns to its mother. Fire heats, wind moves, water wets, earth is solid, eye and sights, ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue and tastes. Thus, with each and everything, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. So this prose poem owes a lot to Huayan Buddhism. And one of my favorite Huayan metaphors is the metaphor of the beam in the ceiling beam. Now, these are actually fake beams, I think. I know they're fake beams. The Huayan did not know about fake beams. So it only knew about real beams. So in the Huayan metaphor, the beam that holds the house, holds up the house, is only the beam. It's only the beam. If it tries to do anything else than be a beam, the whole house collapses, right? If it says the ceiling isn't doing a good enough job, I better do extra, it's going to collapse. Only by completely being the beam that it is, without worrying about the ceiling or the walls decaying or the stucco coming off, it supports the house. And as a matter of fact, the beam is the house. It not only supports the house, it is the house. Because without the beam, what would the house be? So the beam, by completely being just itself, only a beam, it is the house. That's Sandokai. That's the harmony of difference and oneness. That's the whole. That's all my talks. That's all my talks. That's the whole deal. Got it? So we want to be someone else. We're not doing good enough. If only this, if only that, if only I was more like you, if only you were more like me. Oh, he's the right one. And then we're not authentically ourselves. When we're authentically ourselves just as we are, anger, sadness, love, joy, stillness, we're everything. We're the whole thing. We are that anyway, but we don't realize it because we're trying to be more than just a beam. We're trying to hold up the ceiling and repair the stucco and take care of the floor. Oh, what a burden we have. What a burden we human beings have. And I've been talking about this thing that we human beings do as the body of fear. The body of fear. And I talked about it last time, how we get encapsulated in the body of fear. And I talked last time also about the amygdala. The amygdala, which is in the old brain, in the reptilian brain, which is a small yellow almond shape. I've never seen it, but I saw the pictures. The old brain. And that's the brain to deal with lions and tigers and cold and frostbite, and that's fight or flight brain. Fight or flight, or when we don't fight or flight, as I said last time, what do? We numb out. We numb out. In that brain, in that old little reptilian brain back here, which protects us, which has a Darwinian purpose. But we overdo it. We overdo it. We just overdo it. we just and we create so much unnecessary anxiety for ourselves and for others because of this fixation we have on this fear body, fleeing or fighting or numbing out. So last time I talked about my friend who was in an automobile accident. I'm going to talk about two automobile accidents today. One of them I got reminded of a couple of days ago by Wanda or Marty. I had a long time ago. But this, my friend was in an automobile accident very recently. And she talked about how calm she was just after the accident. How she was able just to, although it was a really bad accident, able to go up and get the driver's name and number and exchange insurance policies and call the police and wait calmly for the police and all this, did all this stuff. And then a month later, she hit a bump in the road and she burst out crying. She burst out in tears. Because her amygdala had been helping her, had been numbing out. Instead of fighting or fleeing, she numbed out. And then later, it came up. It doesn't have to be PTSD. This kind of thing happens all the time to us as human beings. So that's what we notice in Zen meditation. That's what we noticed. And I talked last time also about studies with Tibetan meditators who've been meditating for many years. And what did the studies say? The studies, one study, lots of studies, you know, it was one study. And that one study showed that the long-time meditators had much less density in their amygdala, much less density, much more space within their amygdala. Makes sense, doesn't it? So that's what we're doing here. We're in our meditation. And there's a small group here of about 10 or 11 people who've been sitting for 2 days. This is our second day. And some of you came in and sat for 45 minutes beforehand, and some of you were just listening to the talk. But it doesn't matter. The meditation practice, the practice of meditation, is about seeing that body of fear, just seeing it, paying attention to it, not looking for it. You don't have to look for it. Oh, it hasn't come up. Darn, I'm supposed to be paying attention to it. Well, a little anxiety will come up when you sit, unless you're totally numbed out. And that's the body of fear. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It doesn't have to be anything. So you see it. You get to know it. You get to really know it. You won't ever understand it. You could try to understand it intellectually, but that's a waste of your meditation. Don't do that. You're wasting your meditation. Because you want to know it more closely than that. More closely than just understanding it intellectually. Really know it. So The fear body covers over, as I said last time, and I'll talk about a little more today, the Buddha body. The Buddha body. But what's the Buddha body? The Buddha body isn't anything. The Buddha body is just the absence of the fear body. Although they sure talk a lot about the Buddha body. And the Buddha body, it has three main components, as I was talking about last time. It's kaya body. It's kaya body, Buddha kaya. And Buddha kaya has three major components. One, it's dharma kaya. The Buddha body as timelessness, as openness, as oneness. And the second, nirmana kaya. Kaya again, nirmana, as this little body, that little body, this body, So the human body, the finite body, the body that has cracks in it, the body that's deteriorating. And the third body is the sambhogakaya, sambhoga, appreciation. So it's just one body, the Buddha body. It's the beam and the house and the appreciation that the beam is just a beam and it's the whole house at the same time. That I'm just struggling, little Tim. I've always been little. I can't get any bigger. I'm only getting smaller. I don't even like to go to the doctors anymore because my height is decreasing. And when they do that part, I want to shut my eyes because I'm getting smaller and smaller. This little Tim who can't sit very well anymore and is deteriorating fast, but let's not hope too furiously, is the body of the universe. Because he is just here. Because he is just here. He's the body of the universe. And he doesn't try to be anything more than what he is. He is that body. He is that body anyway. But he forgets it. He overlooks it. And that's great appreciation. That's sambhoga. Great appreciation. That within this little messed up, confused body, the whole universe, all of life, wow. Wow. Timelessness, stillness, great peace within this messed up little body. With numbness in the foot and pain in the hip, on and on and on. Right? Wait and see, you guys. Wait and see. It will happen to you too, sooner or later. So my second accident, which I had forgotten about till Wanda or Marty reminded me, because they're doing a book on my talks, and so they send me stuff, and I think, oh, I talked about that? So I was in a, and of course, I probably what I'm going to say now is not what I said 8 or 9 years ago, because you know, memory is very fluid. It might be the same, I don't know. So 8 or 9 years ago, I was in an automobile accident, and I got sideswiped. It was a bad accident. My car got total. I was driving, but I was being good. I had my seatbelt on, you know, my, what are those things that blow up were there, to blow up, right? What do you call those? You know, airbags. So they blew up. And but I got mashed from the side, and really mashed. I don't know where this guy was, what this guy was up to, but it just mashed right into me. And my windshield crumpled, and my door crumpled, and everything was all around me was crumpled. But I still had my seatbelt on. And so it happened, you know, really fast. And there's the amygdala. There's a chance when we want the amygdala to work, right? That's why we have an amygdala. Because then, in that kind of situation, you wanna activate your fight or flight. You need to activate that. That's why somebody or other invented the amygdala, right? But the deal is that I'm locked in there. I can't fight and I can't flight because my door is all mashed. I can't open it. I can't do anything. So I can't fight or flight. And I could numb out, I suppose. But I see it, and it's not that I think this way. I've been practicing meditation for years and years and years as an opportunity just to be. And not that I think it, but I experience it. So I just breathe, and I look at this windshield, and it's incredible. It's incredible. I look at all of the ways that it's cracked and how the crack... how the sun reflects the light on the cracks and how they kaleidoscopically change as the sun is gradually moving and the shadows are coming in. Wow! Wow! And then I'm just sitting there, and someone else calls the police, or calls the ambulance, but I'm just sitting there looking at, enjoying the windshield. Of course, I'm also feeling my body, and I don't have any real bad pain in my body, although everything around me is all crushed. My body doesn't seem to be crushed. Now, if my body were crushed, I probably would not be enjoying the kaleidoscope there. In fact, on the contrary. So then someone comes over to the car, and it's either police or ambulance or something, rescue people, and they take me very softly, very softly. And I can feel the gentleness of their touch. I can feel them holding me and moving me. Of course, they're trained to do it very softly, out of the car. And I feel so, so wonderful as they move me out. And I don't know how I get out. They move me out the window. I don't know. I have no idea. I just know that human hands nurture me. So it's the Buddha body. It's the Buddha body. And that's a dramatic example of the Buddha body. But the Buddha body is our natural body. Anytime we let go of the fear body, the Buddha body's here. Anytime. And people in retreats struggle and struggle and struggle. And I sit here, I sit facing the center of the room, and I kind of watch them struggle. And I see how hard it is for them. I see how hard it is. How hard it is when they want to be, want to accomplish something, want to be comfortable, want to get somewhere. But they stay, moment after moment, they stay. Now, we have retreats every month, you guys, so each of you can have this opportunity. We have half-day retreats, one-day retreats, very long retreats, very short retreats. We have retreats with no bowing, like this one, no bowing for 2 days. We have retreats with lots of bowing. But only when you really sit down and are there can you see how you get carried away by the fear body. And is there a chance for you to let go of the fear body and experience the Buddha body, which is nothing. It's not a Buddha. Forget the Buddha body. It's just timelessness in right here. Timelessness right here in peeling a carrot and drinking a glass of water right here. Sandokai, the harmony of difference and oneness. Paying attention, paying attention, paying attention. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about this, the text itself for today. The four elements return to their mothers just as a the four elements return to their nature just as a child returns to its mother. Fire heats, wind moves, water wets, earth is solid. So in Buddhist thought, which is not very different from Eastern thought, from Western thought, there are fire, earth, water, and wind. Fire, earth, water, and wind, the four elements. And supposedly, if we steep ourselves in this meditation practice, we develop a balance between these four elements. Because all four are important. We need the fire element. Not only does it heat, it gives us some energy, some passion, some real engagement in the world. We need the fire element. We need the water element. And we're reading Dogen now, and Dogen is really into the water element. He seems to like it best. Well, why not? Why not? Water has incredible fluidity. It dissolves everything. It smooths over everything. It breaks everything down. It makes everything affected by each other, right? It gives everything a quality of ease. Quality of ease, the water element. Important element. Important element. And then the third element, the wind element. Well, the wind can blow away all of that thinking that you're getting stuck to. Can just blow it away. Can lighten things up so that you're not tethered to the fear body. You're just light. It's so light that the tear body has lost its density. The amygdala has lost its density completely. Then when they wire you up, you Zen meditators will do just as well as the Tibetan meditators, which you won't try. It'll just happen because you've steeped yourself in this practice. You've steeped yourself in this practice. Zen meditators and Tibetan meditators can get competitive sometimes. Well, that's the fear body. That's the fear body. We want our Zen center to... I want our Zen center, me as a teacher, to prevail, right? Well, when I see that, all I have to do is watch it, breathe into it, and let it go. Let it go. And if it doesn't go, let it stay. It's really not dense. It's really not dense. I just make it dense. You just make it dense. And the earth element, solid. In Zen, we emphasize manual labor, doing things, cooking, making cooking your practice, sweeping your practice, taking care of your buildings and grounds, your practice. Very important. Earth, to bring us into our bodies so we're not just up in the air all the time. So this is not too different from Western astrology. Maybe a little bit different. I'm an earth sign. I'm a Taurus, which I don't know much about astrology, but I'm told that's a real earth sign. And my wife is a fire sign. So years ago, a friend of ours who had steeped herself in astrology said, this was like 40 years ago, asked us what our signs were, and we told her. And she said, oh, that's too bad. She said, fire and earth. Fire and earth just don't get along. And then she said, well, let me check in to see what your rising sign and your moon signs are. Then she looked at our rising signs and our moon signs. Luckily, I was not a triple Taurus, and Linda was not a triple Sagittarius, because there was balance. So from Western astrology point of view, it looked like we could get married after all. And that was 40-some years ago, so here we are. But in Buddhist practice, we harmonize our lives. We harmonize. We need all four of these. We bring them into harmony. We bring them into harmony through our practice. Not too much sitting facing the wall. Not too much digging in the garden. Some people need to bring more earth sign into their lives, so they should be digging in the garden instead of sitting facing the wall. Some people need to really bring more wind, more air into their life. They should be sitting more, those people. And of course, we all should do everything. But not should like good or bad, just should because it will help us enjoy our natural Buddha body. It'll help us enjoy it. So these lines then, the four elements return to their natures, just as a child turns to its mother. Fire heats, wind moves, water wets. Water wets, earth is solid. These talk about how at the time of death, the four elements dissociate from their union as a person, and each will go home to its mama. Each goes home to its mama, returning to the world of Dao, the world of oneness. San Dao Kai. San individual, Dao oneness, Kai harmony, appreciation. Like a baby going back to its mother with such love, so naturally, so easily. When we do this practice, we can experience that. We give ourselves to it. We can experience that. And then we just let go of the fear body and don't even know it. Don't even know it. And the next lines. Eye and sights, ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue and tastes. Thus, with each and everything, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. Each leaf and each branch is directly connected to the root. Oneness. Each san, each thing, is rooted in Dao. Each thing is rooted in dough. But that's, the metaphor is not quite, doesn't quite get it, because each son is dough. Each son is dough. Each individual thing is the entire thing. The individual, each of you guys, not just me, the teacher, you're the undivided. The individual as the undivided expressed. The undivided likes to express itself, needs to express itself, and you guys are, where is expression? This is its expression. It's always expressing itself. It loves it. We are its expression. We are its expression. It doesn't matter how screwed up your mind is. It's the expression of the undivided, just as it is. Just as it is. It doesn't matter how many aches and pains you have. So each and everything has its place. Each and everything has its place, its dignity. Its dignity. This cup has its dignity, just as it is. Even if it were a plastic cup, it would have its plastic dignity, as it were. Oh, I don't want plastic. I don't want a plastic cup. That's not what I'm talking about, you guys. Plastic cup has its dignity, just as it is. Its purpose, every breath, every thought, doesn't matter how nasty your thought is, it's the best thing there could be, because it's an expression of the undivided. It's an expression of the undivided. San is the expression of a dough, and the Kai is the great appreciation. Great appreciation. It just comes. Just comes up. So there's a Taoist story which I've told probably, but maybe not for 15 or 20 years. Who knows? But then Wanda might find something that I talked about last year. She goes through my, listens to all those tapes. But this story is a Taoist story. And the vassal and the lord, right? Vassal and lord. And this is a high lord. He's almost an emperor kind of lord. And the vassal works for him. And one of the things the vassal has to do is to get food for the kitchen. And the lord is an epicure. He likes good food. He likes good food. So the vassal has to go out and go grocery shopping in old China. Grocery shopping, so he can bring the food back so that Tenzo can cook the food for the lord. So the vassal hears about a wonderful place to buy meat, because of course the lord eats meat. He's not a Buddhist, he's a Confucianist. Also a Taoist on the side. But and he goes to the best place to buy meat. Told the best place to buy meat. There are many, many different kinds of meat. And he goes there and he sees all the meat lined up in rows. And he says to the guy who looks like the butcher behind the meat stall, isn't this a pleasing image? Those of you who are vegans, don't you love this image? He says to the guy, the guy said, well, what would you like? He said, I'm buying meat for the lord of your kingdom. Your lord. And he said, oh, okay. And the guy says, okay, what do you want? And he said, I want the best piece of meat that you can give me. I want the best piece of meat from this whole array. And what does the butcher say? The butcher says, there is no piece of meat which is not the best. That's the story. There is no piece of meat which is not the best. There is no thought. There is no feeling. There is no movement. There is no expression which is not the best. Undividedness expresses itself. Just as we are. Just as we are. We don't have to be any different. And if you want to be different, that's the expression too. So sure, you want to be different. You need to be different. You made some mistakes. Then that's the expression. Then your apology is the expression of the undivided. You apologize from your heart of hearts. So the fear body has a mind which is not a beginner's mind. Beginner's mind in the sense Suzuki, my teacher, used it. It's a nagging negative nabob or something. It's a cranky saboteur. It's a cranky, naggy saboteur. Sabotages everything. Everything. I mean, everything's the best, but what does the fear body mind? The fear body mind doesn't believe that everything's the best. It's trying to find the best thing. It needs the best thing to survive, to prevail, to be okay, to be enlightened even. So just notice it. Just notice it. It happens to all of us. It's happening in all of us. All the time. All the time. That sabotage is going on. And we notice that sabotage. Just notice it with our kindness, not with our criticism, because our criticism is more of the fear body, right? Just another layer of the fear body. Then the fear body's density breaks up. It breaks up. And there's the Buddha body. And if you say, oh, Buddha body, that's not it. Wrong. Because then you're concretizing, right? And you're turning into something. It's not a thing. So last time I talked about ways in which the fear body sabotages. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about those today. Not too much, though. Just a little bit. So last time I don't know actually which of these I talked about last time, but I'm going to talk about them a little differently. So what does the fear body mind do? What does it do? They're patterns that it does, right? Styles that it has. One style that it has is all or nothing thinking. All or nothing thinking. That's a style of the fear body. People have been sitting here with me for a day and a half, a lot of people. And maybe they've been thinking the whole time. Or maybe they've been worrying their whole time, planning their meals and trying to deal with their pain their whole time. And maybe they say, geez, I did it. I spent a whole day and a half on this in a beautiful June day when everybody was out having a good time. And I'm just not cut out for Zen retreat. I'm just not cut out. That's all or nothing thinking. That's all or nothing thinking. The fact that they stayed here, that they kept coming back time and time again to just being present, just trying to be present, that's already seeing through the density of the Buddha body. That's all, of the fear body. That's already opening up to the Buddha body. Just staying with what is, just completely accepting what is, opens up the fear body. It just cracks open completely. Cracks open when you least expect it. When you least expect it. All or nothing thinking, and then related to that, always never thinking. That's a fear body tactic, right? Always never thinking. You came here two or three times for meditation, and two out of those times you had a bad experience meditating. So then you say, oh, I can never become a good meditator. All or nothing thinking, right? Or you came here a half dozen times and your mind was flitting around during the sitting all six times. Then you say, my mind always flits around in my sitting. Well, that's not true. That's the fear of body. That's not true. If your mind always flitted around in your sitting, would you even notice it? You wouldn't notice it was flitting. You'd be just gate, gate. but not in a good way. Nobody's mind always flits around in their sitting. The very noticing that it flits around is the beginning of the extinguishing of the fear body. It's the beginning of the falling away of the fear body. It just does it. It just doesn't. Magnification is the third thing that the fear body does. There are lots of things, but I only give four today because, you know, it's you guys want some of you want to be out playing, and the rest of us want to be in here sitting like good boys and girls. Well, you guys will be good boys and girls out playing too. Good, we're all good. There's nothing that's not good. But this is not the good and bad good. This is not that good and bad good. That's different. Oh, magnification. Exaggerating the significance of minor problems while trivializing an accomplishment. Now, 2 years ago, I hurt my back, and so I couldn't sit half lotus anymore. And my fear body came in. And I couldn't sit half lotus, and I couldn't sit quarter lotus. And I could sit like this, seiza. This is, we call this seiza. But I magnified. I'm the Zen teacher. I'm the teacher. I should be able to do this. And I wasn't paying attention when I hurt my back. I should have been paying attention. It's even embarrassing to tell you how I hurt my back. I'm not going to tell you. The fear body doesn't want to tell you. Keeping it private, secret. But I'm able to sit like this. The next year, when I got much worse health problems, then I couldn't even sit up at all. This time I didn't magnify. This time I didn't magnify. I just lay down and did my bare attention laying down. But that magnification always comes in when we're trying to live up to something, when you're trying to be something, or when we're trying to protect ourselves. I want to protect my role as a Zen teacher around here. The Roshi around here. Right? And I haven't had to sit in a chair yet. Oh, horrors of horrors. Those of you who are Zen students. But often I can't even get out of bed. So... And then the last one that I'm talking about today, the last pattern that sustains the fear body, that keeps the fear body dense and rigid and turgid and yucky, right, is your shoulds getting out of control. Your shoulds, S-H-O-U-L-D-S, is getting out of control. We need shoulds. We need shoulds. I should make time to exercise every day. I should. I want to. I'm trying to, and if I get healthy again, I'm a little healthy now. Actually, I've been healthy for a little while. I will. So that's fine. Those shoulds are fine. That's san. That's an individual. We need aspiration. We need shoulds. We all do. With no super ego. Well, I won't get into that. That's a whole other talk. But we need that stuff. We need that stuff. But do we need to launch into self-criticism and resentment? Do I need to launch into self-criticism about not getting my exercise, resenting that I'm not paying attention, or that my job is demanding, or my wife is demanding, or I am demanding? Do I need to launch into that? If I do, that's the fear body. All I have to do is see that pattern, just see it, just breathe into it, and it loses its density on its own if you do this practice, if you do this meditation practice. So, after a while, we sabotage the Buddha body less and less. We use the fear body less and less to sabotage the fear body. That's the promise of Zen meditation. That's not my promise to you. I can easily make that promise to you. It's an easy promise for me. I can't promise you many things, but I can promise you that. I can promise you. So I want to close with a comment by my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, whose commentary on the San Dokai, Branching Roots, Flow in the Darkness, is a book that I'm kind of fond of. He comments on this section that I've just been talking about in his book. His commentary is his commentary, and mine's mine, but they're the same, right? 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 How can it be different? How can it be all... Whose is better? Whose is better? Whose is worst? They're all the best. We're all the best. Everything is the best. This is not some Pollyannish notion, you guys. This is not Pollyannish. This is not about religion, you guys. It's not sweetness, you guys. It's not about that. It's about the being just being the being. You just being you. And you're everything. You are everything. Okay, Suzuki Roshi. So after he talks about this section, a student asks him, if a person sees things clearly, in other words, without the fear body, although the student doesn't say that, that's what I'm adding. If a person sees things clearly without the fear body, is there no case in which he would be upset emotionally? And Suzuki says, upset emotionally? I don't think so. But affected, yes. There's a big difference between these two. A Buddha may be upset quite easily in the sense of being deeply affected. But when he is upset, it is not because of his attachments. Sometimes he will be very angry. Angry is allowed when it is Buddha's anger. But that anger is not the same as the anger we usually have. If a Buddha is not upset when he should be upset, that is also a violation of the precepts. That's my teacher. That is also a violation of the precepts. When he needs to be angry, he must be angry. That is a characteristic of the Mahayana way of observing precepts. We say, sometimes anger is like a sunset. Even though it looks like anger, actually it is a beautiful red sunset. If anger comes from a pure mind, from purity like a lotus, it is good. So he's making a distinction here between being emotionally disturbed and deeply affected. Deeply affected. The fear body thrives on emotional disturbance. It's fed by emotional disturbance. The Buddha body is deeply affected. We're deeply affected by things. Everybody is. Everybody is. Unless we're numbed out, right? So, I'll tell you a story which I heard about from Wanda because it's in my book. Suzuki Roshi was coming to speak at my college. I'm from the West Coast, and I went to Stanford University, and he was coming to speak there. And he was not very happy about speaking there I'm not going to go into that. Anyway, he accepted the invitation to come speak there. And that was a pretty good turnout of maybe a lot of people for those days, maybe 25 people. And I was sitting next to him in the front row before he got up to speak. Oh, no, actually, we were to the side. We were on the side. And I was kind of, since it was my school and, you know, he was coming to my school, I kind of had set it up for him. He was sitting next to me, and it was time for him to speak. And he said, and he looked at me, and he said, I scared. He just said it once. And then he clasped my hand. He clasped my hand just like this. I scared. And then he got up, and he gave a wonderful talk. A wonderful talk. Of course, I'm prejudiced, you know. But none of my college friends fell asleep, so that was a pretty good sign. That was a pretty good sign. Suzuki Roshi says about this line, these lines that I've been talking about, if you just appreciate each thing one by one, you will have a feeling of pure gratitude. Fear, anger, love, deep acceptance of the fear body is the Buddha body. And there's no Buddha body, so don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just enjoy this best day. This best moment and this best day. Whether you're sitting here with us or going out to play.